And welcome back to Coast. Paul McGuire's with us. We're going to take your calls this hour as we talk about biblical prophecy. Soon we're going to talk about CERN again. Can it open up portals and let these other beings through? We'll find out. And welcome back to Coast. Paul McGuire with us. George Norrie here. Paul, so back to CERN for a moment. As they play with this thing and dabble with it and maybe dabbling with things they don't know what they're doing, can they open up a portal or stargate and let some kind of beings or creatures through?
Yeah, absolutely, because that's what happened with the Tower of Babel. They opened up an interdimensional portal, a stargate, and beings from another dimension came through. Now, we don't know the identity of all the beings, but we know that some of the beings were very, very evil. So just by opening a portal, which is really what CERN is all about, it's an interdimensional portal, or it's the same thing as the Babylon, the Tower of Babylon. It's a gate of the gods, and gods meaning these interdimensional beings. So CERN is if it hasn't already, I suspect it has already, allowed for the entrance of interdimensional beings. The question is, who are these beings?
Right.
And do these beings have the power, which I believe they do, to subjugate mankind? And more importantly, subjugate the hierarchy of the invisible or shadow government, if you will. They capture control, but you're giving them a technological entrance for invasion. And it has very serious consequences.
Do you think these beings might be the same kind of beings that come through portals when you play with a Ouija board?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Because regardless of what your particular religious beliefs are or are not, I mean, every religion talks about the existence of evil and spirits. I mean, spirits, the discussion of spirits is common in every nation on Earth. In America, I mean, the Indians dealt with spirits. The Christians and the Pilgrims and Puritans believed in spirits and demons. And I personally, even though I don't really talk about it publicly, this is probably the first time I've talked about it publicly, I am a very scientific person, very analytical. I'm not given over to, you know, leaps of logic or fanciful ideas, even though I traffic in, to some people, what are strange ideas. I'm very linear and analytical. But I have met people who have been demon-possessed. And you look in their eyes, and you're not looking at a funny look in your eyes, in their eyes. You're looking at another being inhabiting their physical body. And it's eerie. It's like something out of a science fiction movie. And I've seen them come out also. But they are evil, and they will stay there as long as they're given permission, because there's always a portal. See, in terms of individual spirit possession, all right, or individual demonic possession, a person accidentally, usually, opens a portal to that. They may not realize it, but they open a portal.
Mm-hmm. And they can't close it either.
Exactly. And unless they know how to get that thing to leave, it's going to stay until it's ordered out.
Adolf Hitler, Paul, was interested in the occult, and I've always wondered if he dabbled with it to such an extent that he, too, brought in more evil. I mean, because you can't get more evil than he was.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And Hitler's top men, I mean, the key leaders of the Third Reich, his highest-ranking generals and propaganda ministers, et cetera, people like Himmler and others, they were all members of secret German occult societies like Vril and Thule, etc. But Hitler's highest-ranking officers who were involved in the occult, they said of Hitler with fear and trembling that Hitler scared them because they believed he was demon-possessed. And that was the analysis of Hitler's top-ranking generals. They believed he was demon-possessed. And there were different hierarchies or orders of demons. So when a person like Hitler allowed a very powerful demon in him, that demon has the ability to give a man like Hitler the power of mass persuasion when he's speaking, enlightened military strategies. the spirit being or the demon or whatever can actually enhance a human being's power as a military leader, as a leader, but it's always done for the purposes of evil. And Hitler was a monster of evil, but it was demonically energized. That's the point. It wasn't a human ability. It was a demonic ability.
And how he got it, how he obtained it, could have been from these kinds of sources.
Well, apparently, often what happens in people's lives is there's often demonic possession or the entrance of demonic possession when somebody goes through severe emotional trauma, hurt, or woundedness. And we know that Hitler was rejected from the two, you know, great art schools, one in Austria, and he was rejected from the School of Art in Germany. And that broke him because he wanted to be an artist. And he rage filled him, and many people think that and his participation in these very high-level occult rituals where he was taking psychedelic drugs, and he was being trained by a man named Eckhart, who was a master disciple of the occult. They believed that he was demonically possessed around that time period.
Let's go to the phones. Frank in Tucson, Arizona, to get us started west of the Rockies. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's correct about people being possessed. I think a lot of people in the insane are actually possessed. But I want to talk about prophets and Lord healing the sick and raising the dead.
Yeah.
He did when he was walking on the earth. But when they asked him about the last days, he said, on that day, things that I do and more will they do that believe upon me. In my name they shall put the hands upon the sick and do.
Right. I know what verse you're referring to. Greater works than these will you do.
And what does that all mean, Paul?
Well, Christ was telling his disciples, which simply disciples is just a fancy word for anybody who chooses to follow him. He was telling his disciples or anyone who would follow him that in the last days, you will have the power available to you to do greater miracles than what I did on earth. And I find that very interesting, first of all, because I believe it. But second of all, I believe Christ was communicating the greater miracles on a wider spectrum than just what is traditionally taught about. For example, in the book of Genesis, the first characteristic that we're introduced to about the nature of the infinite personal living God of the universe is that he's a creator and that he's creative. And creativity is an essential part of his character. You never hear that preached in a church, but it's in the very first book of the Bible, in the very first verse, that he's a creator. And so part of the greater miracles, a miracle also includes, besides, let's say, physical healing or a miraculous financial supply or somebody's drowning, let's say, and they pray to God and miraculously they're rescued from drowning. I mean, those are all miracles. But miracles are also when a human being begins to operate on the level of talent and ability that has already been downloaded as kind of like divine software that all already exists in every man and woman alive. In their DNA, they have the capacities to do many godlike things. So just in the area of creativity and intelligence, and this is something sadly the church has missed, we are to be, a miracle is also utilizing the super intelligence of God. God talks about, the Bible talks about the mind of Christ. What is the mind of Christ? That is the highest level of consciousness a human being can think and operate from. It's when all your neurological pathways are operational, that your right hemisphere, which is your analytical, connecting the dots, big picture brain, is not shrunk because it's being deliberately shrunk through the school system, which is designed to dumb you down. So you experience like an awakening. The founding fathers talked about a first great awakening. So you see man begin to behave and act and think and do and create in the higher dimension that God created him to. We have people living like dwarfs. I don't mean that in an unkind way, but like almost like dwarfs, tiny human beings that are not even coming close to reaching their potential. So a miracle is also when God releases your potential, and God has placed potential in every human being alive. And again, it's in the DNA. In the book of Genesis, it says that God created man. In the image of God, he created them, male and female. When God created every man and woman in his own image, in that DNA, we have the DNA of God. There is a deposit of supernatural intelligence. There's a deposit of supernatural creativity and ability and all kinds of talents and gifts. Those are not to be lying dormant inside people, especially Christians, but they are lying dormant. And that's not what God wants. One of the ways you ask me is like, will we make it through the apocalypse? What can we do? Well, we can't do anything unless we are activating this, and we're turning on all the software apps that God has downloaded us to begin with. You know, it's like having a cell phone with all these incredible apps, or a laptop computer with all these incredible apps that enable you to do all these incredible things, but you never activate them. And that's part of greater miracles, because the term miracle needs to be interpreted not just in a tiny sense, but in a broad spectrum.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Dina, in Lawrence, Kansas now. Hi, Dina, go ahead.
Yes, I was calling in regards to what your prophecies, what you're speaking about prophecies, and the portals that we have already learned to open, and they have been put in every country, and I didn't realize it because I looked it up. But it is those CERN-type vehicles that they've built in the grounds across countries and in our own nation, and that is what they do. They create a black hole, and that is a portal, and that was their intention. They've already used it a couple of times just to test it out to see what they can do with it. But also now to speak to what you've been recently talking about, and the manifestation is what we are. That is what we are. We are seed of the divine. We are part of that creative process, and we have that ability. We've been all given that. It is our DNA. And you spend hours in meditation, and you use those abilities. You can enhance them, and it is the connection to the divine, and it is through the power of illumination, and it teaches you just exactly what the abilities that Jesus had. He said that we all had that. And he didn't call God, you know, separate from him. He said it's our Father. He didn't say mine. He said it is ours. It belongs to all of it. It is what we came from. And that is exactly what Genesis talks about right in the first few paragraphs, is what the Creator was doing, was giving you the way how to do it. And that's what Jesus said, this is the way. He didn't say, I am the way. He was telling you, this is how you do it.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I agree with a great deal of what you say. I probably have some disagreements with some of what you say. But regarding your last statement, it's important to know that Jesus did specifically say, I'm quoting his words verbatim from the New Testament. Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but through me. So he was very specific in identifying himself as the way. Jesus is the way. And that's a distinction that I would make that you may not agree with, but I really don't want to argue with you theologically, because I think you had so many good things to say. But he did say, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Are you hopeful for the future, Paul?
Yes, absolutely. I'm hopeful for the future.
With bumps in the road, right?
Yeah, I think it'd be more than bumps.
Yeah, great.
I mean, look, on one hand, I think people knew that I know this intuitively. On one hand, you know, we are in the middle of an Orwellian state, and we could wake up with our freedoms gone, with God knows what could happen. And so, but I don't freak out and lose sleep over that. But on the other hand, there's a biblical verse that is not very, it's not quoted very often by Christians, but it's one of the words of Jesus Christ. He said, occupy the land until I come. Now, what that means, he wasn't talking about it in a militaristic sense. He says, occupy the land until I come. What that means is that until Jesus Christ returns at the second coming, he has given us the power, the creativity, the intelligence, the gifting to occupy the land. That means to exercise authority over the land or the nation or the planet or the city that you live in. And the way you do that is by being light versus darkness. If you do nothing, which is, I'm not being unkind, but what most Christians do nothing. They do nothing. That's why America's in the mess that it's in. They do nothing. But they're supposed to be occupying the land. If you occupy the land, you're extending the light and the truth of the gospel, which allows good things to happen. That opens portals, if you will, a slightly different type of portal, but it opens a portal of what the Pilgrims and Puritans experienced, because they did something very, very heavy and very, very supernatural in the 1600s when they came here. They entered into a contract or a covenant with God based on the same contract that God made with the children of Israel, the blessings and the curses. And if you ever read Deuteronomy 28 and you read the blessings, there are blessings that have to do with economics, agricultural, health, protection from enemies. And America was raised up above all the nations of the earth, despite its imperfections. And I admit it has many imperfections. It was raised up to be a light to the nations. Now, we have forfeited that, but that doesn't mean we can't regain that. And we don't have to become some kind of, right-wing, wacko Christian theocracy. We can do it like as normal, intelligent human beings.
Well, when they talk about the second coming of Christ, do you think that is a real physical situation?
Yes, I do. Because, I believe in a literal resurrection. I don't believe it was symbolic or a metaphor.
Right.
So when Christ was ascending into heaven, his disciples were freaking out and saying, where is he going? And the two angels who were there watching Christ ascend into heaven, they said to him, this same Christ who you see ascending into heaven is going to return in the same manner. So I believe that if you read the book of Revelation carefully, I believe it talks about a literal return by Jesus Christ to this earth in an event called the second coming. And at that time, he will bring about a 1,000-year millennium, which will be peace, abundance, harmony for planet Earth. And then there will be the entrance of the new heaven, the new earth, and the new Jerusalem. And notice that the New Jerusalem is this giant cube. It's a massive cube that hovers over the sphere of Earth. And within the New Jerusalem, which is this sphere that hovers over the Earth, it's like a futuristic city, but it's got like the garden. Think of a combination of a futuristic city hovering over the Earth, but the inside is like the Garden of Eden and all kinds of technology and things that's beyond anybody's ability to imagine.
All right, stay with us, Paul. We're going to come back in a moment and take final phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM. Paul's websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. His book, The Babylon Code. Next hour, we will be talking about some incredible UFO hunting stories. So don't change your dial. We will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, even though I'm in St. Louis, still get my emails from Coast to Coast. Just send it to george@coasttocoastam.com. And we're back with our final segment with Paul McGuire as we talk about, of course, the Book of Revelation, the Babylon Code as well. The sign of the beast, the 666, Paul, what do you think that represents?
I think the mark of the beast, or 666, is going to be a nanochip implant or either a DNA modification with some kind of implant in it. And you will not be able to buy or sell at a certain period in time unless you accept what's called the mark of the beast, 666. And also, there will be an RFID transmitter or a transmitter far more powerful. And there will be a link up with every one of these chips, which will be in many, many people, to satellites. And once you take this chip, the potential for an external power to control your mind, your thoughts, and your behavior, as well as read your thoughts and minds and behavior, will be so far beyond anybody's conception, because it will do two things. It's all about total control.
Mm-hmm.
Total control by who? Total control by the Antichrist and the false prophet, because there is a ritual that you will have to go through to get the mark of the beast, which is you will have to renounce Jesus Christ as Lord, and you will have to pledge to worship the Antichrist as God. If you don't do that, you will be beheaded. And but along with that technology comes, it's a total control device. That's the point.
And will they know where we are all the time if everybody's chipped?
I think they know where we are all the time now, because everybody resonates a specific vibrational frequency that is unique from everybody else. In other words, every one of us have unique fingerprints that other people don't have. Every one of us have a physical body which resonates a specific vibrational frequency that sophisticated computers and technology can read anywhere in the world. But I think the implant will simply enhance this.
All right, back to the phones. Wayne in Chicago, welcome to the program. Wayne, good to have you.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me, George?
Yes.
Yes, I've been waiting a long time for a guest like him. I want to ask this question. I want you to think about it, not just intellectually, but morally. Okay, this is the Akashic Records. I call them the Akashic. Some people say Akashic. I like Akashic. Okay, those represent every thought, deed, word of human beings throughout human history. So we know that God knows everything before it happens, because God is the creator of time. So this is my question, like, in a 24-hour period on planet Earth, just imagine how many murders, robberies, assaults, rapes, you name it, occur in a 24-hour period on Earth. Now, when those fallen angels came down from Mount Hermon, came down to Mount Hermon, God knew what they had planned already, which was the corruption and pollution of the earth, using mankind to do it. And you guys said yourselves that their consciousness is far superior to ours. So my question is, since God knew that they were going to do that and cause all this destruction, why even allow them to do it, knowing that they're going to do it? Put them in prison on Mars somewhere before they even attempt to do it, because before they did it, God knew that they were going to do it. That's my question.
Well, you're probably asking one of the most important theological questions of all time, especially as it relates to the concept that God knows what's going to happen before it happens. And then it goes to the other question, which is, how can a loving God allow evil to happen, especially when he knows about it beforehand? And there's no short way to answer it, so I'll give you a short version. It all comes down to the fact that in order for God to create man as man, man had to have free will. So every one of us have free will. We're not forced to love God. We can love God if we choose. We can reject God if we choose. We can do good. We can do wrong. Now, notice that with the Antichrist, you can only do what the Antichrist wants you to do, because he will dominate your mind, just like Brother Technology will dominate your mind. You have no free will. So the risk that God had to take, because his brain is infinite, and there's no way around it. The only way that man can be man, and remember, man is the highest exalted being in existence under God. Man is godlike. He's not God, but he's godlike. So man had to be created with free will. Man had to be created with the will to do evil or good and free choice. Because the minute God interferes with that playing out, He destroys the intricacy of his very complex system, which is ultimately based on love. Now, I know it sounds absolutely insane to claim that God is love and then at the same time tell people over a national radio program that he knows evil before it's going to happen and he lets it happen.
Yeah, lets it happen, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could give you an answer, but there's no way I can squeeze it down to a couple of minutes. But it all comes down to free will. But here's the end story. God allows this for an extended period of time, thousands and thousands of years. But there will be a period of time when the time clock stops and it's over. And then you will not see the love of God or necessarily the creativity of God. You're going to see the judgment of God, where every man and woman will be accountable for what they've done down here on earth. And then he pulls the plug on it. And that gets into a whole different theological story. So know this, God is not indifferent to what you're saying. You are created in the image of God. And if you being a man and me being a man, if we in our humanness are concerned about this fairness and about this injustice, remember, we're made in the image of God. Think about how much more God is concerned with solving injustice and stopping child trafficking and all the rest of it. So God's not indifferent to it, but it's a hard thing to explain in just a couple of sentences.
Walter in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's great to be on with you once again.
Hey, Walter.
George, with all due respect to Mr. McGuire, I don't think there's any way you can reconcile real science with the Bible or the Quran or the Mahabharata or any of the other quote-unquote holy texts. I think that...
Explain.
George, I think some of the things he's saying are just preposterous extrapolations, like, you know, saying that the angels are analogous to ETs and that Noah had cognizance of DNA.
No, I said that.
Well, George, I don't think that Newton, Darwin, and Einstein was cognizant of DNA. I mean, and to say that...
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask you a question? I mean, you made a general statement, and that's fine. I accept that. Give me one specific question, and then I'll attempt to answer it. But just one specific question. Because you painted a broad brush. I can't answer a broad brush. Give me a specific question.
All right, that's fair. Walt, go ahead.
Well, sir, you know, according to the Bible, it's the earth and the universe is less than 6,000 years old. According to the Jewish calendar, it's now the year, 5,778, I think. So, sir, you know, when you look at the Grand Canyon and...
Okay, I got your point. May I attempt to answer that?
Go for it.
But I got your point. It's a legitimate point. Christian scholars and theologians debate on that very issue. I, for one, I'm not necessarily sold on the idea that the Earth, let's say, is 6,000 years old. I think the Earth is quite a bit older than that, and there is what's called prehistory. So God tells us a whole lot of the story, beginning in Genesis, but he doesn't tell us in detail, and a great number of things happened before Genesis. It's just that they're not in the scripture. So I don't disagree with you on that, but I don't think you can say that the Bible's preposterous. It's people don't interpret it properly. Genesis is from the beginning of creation, but there's no that the text does not talk about prehistory, and clearly, as you pointed out with a number of factors, there is prehistory. How far back it goes, I don't know, but there is prehistory.
Let's go to Barbara in Los Angeles now. Hey, Barb, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest, how does his presentation about the Bible match up with the cosmologies of indigenous cultures the world over and all this in the air?
Which one, Barb? I don't know where she
was.
Barb, you there? Nope, she hung up. So we don't know.
I could guess, but that wouldn't be fair.
How about, let's say, the Mayans?
Right. Okay. Well, the Mayan calendar, either men misinterpreted it, especially regarding 2012, because I didn't see the events come forward like everybody said they would come forward, unless I'm missing something. And that may not be that the Mayan calendar was necessarily off. It may be it was interpreted improperly. But the Mayan religion and the society that stemmed from the Mayan religion is very similar to the system brought about in ancient Babylon at the Tower of Babel and the Pharaoh God King system. You had an occult elite, which you had in Egypt and you had in Babylon, and the occult elite ruled the Mayan civilization and their temples. And just like the ancient civilizations in the pagan cultures at the time of Babylon and in Egypt, sacrifice, human sacrifice and animal sacrifice was a key aspect of that society. What Mel Gibson made a movie on that. I can't pronounce it, but he details that fairly well. So the idea of human sacrifice...
Apocalypto.
Exactly right, Apocalypto, which is a brilliant movie. But the idea of a human sacrifice as a means of appeasing an angry god. So the Mayan system is a system where mankind, the Mayans, know that they're on the wrong side of God, and they measure that by like how well their crops are doing, or are they losing wars, or are there disease outbreaks among their culture, and they make an appraisal. And if things are going bad for them, then they up the number of bodies that they kill. They decapitated them. So there's a system that's based on justice and injustice, and then they borrow. It's a kind of a hybrid theology. They borrow from the Bible, which says without the spilling of blood, there's no remission of sins. But that pointed to the sacrifice of lambs and then the sacrifice of the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ. So they borrow from that somewhat. But the concept of the God that they're worshiping is not a benevolent, loving God. The God of the Mayans is almost, I don't want to go so far as saying a cruel God, but in a sense he is a cruel God, because he's appeased by the sacrifice of innocent people. Whereas the Christian God, conversely, God in the Bible does not demand the sacrifice of people to please him. And any religion that, like the Mayan religion, the ancient Mayan religion, that demands the sacrifice of people to please God, I believe is on the wrong side of the love of God and the whole way the universe is ultimately constructed.
Let's go to Chris in North Carolina, east of the Rockies. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hey, guys, how we doing?
Okay.
I just wanted to know your take on dinosaurs and how maybe that works out.
A little more specific.
Well, I mean, were they real? Were they something made up? Or
well, they were the real deal already. I don't know how they got to be so big. It was a different kind of atmosphere then, but they were the real deal to be sure. I don't know if you want to jump in on that or not, Paul.
No, I agree with you, George. Dinosaurs were the real deal, and one of the ways we know that is their bones through excavations have been found.
Well, they just found one with like a 7-foot or something like that.
Right. So we know that dinosaurs existed. And that's one of the reasons I believe that there is a chronology of what I call prehistory, where there are events that happen before what happened in the book of Genesis. And it would go into the area of dinosaurs, and it might even go into the area, and this is partially speculative on my part, about the cities on Mars, like Phoenicia and Cydonia, et cetera. That seems to allude to some kind of star travel by some kind of entity or beings before the time of the Garden and perhaps during the time of the ancient dinosaurs.
Paul, it was 4 years since you were last on with me, other than when we got together in Boulder, Colorado. When do we see you again?
Oh, I'd love to be on. I love your show. I love your program. And I always have fun. So you invite me, I'll be on.
You got it. Were you working on anything specifically?
Yeah, well, we had a book, Trumpocalypse, come out. That's doing very well. And we're working on another book I also finished a book called Conquering the Matrix, which deals with overcoming scientific mind control, how to discover if you're under the influence of some kind of trance state without being aware of it. And we're working on a feature film.
Good for you.
Babylon Code.
That'll be great. All right. Thank you, Paul. It's always great talking with you. Up next, we're going UFO hunting, so stick around on Coast to Coast AM. You're going to love this. And then, of course, we'll take phone calls in the last hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial.